any criticisms you may have, or you can send me an email just asking for help or advice or for me to help you with a CV. It doesn't matter. I'm there to help, but I can also give you my bank details or alternative ways to donate if you wish to donate that way. All financial assistance is very, very gratefully received. So thank you in advance for any financial assistance you send, because as I say, it is very gratefully received. Now, tonight, we have an absolutely incredible show, and we have a guy with us tonight who Jason's going to do his bit in a second, but we've got to do something before we get into the show. And what we've got to do is talk about this incredible man, because I have jokingly referred to him as Mr. Towler. He is Laura Towler's husband. He was recently doxxed. His name's Sam Mealy. Before we go into the show, let's just say a huge congratulations to Sam for marrying Laura. This guy is an incredibly nice guy. He's an incredibly good friend. He's one of the nicest guys I've met in this cause over the many years I've been involved. Him and Laura are very, very happy. They make a perfect couple. Both of them are dear friends of mine. So before we go over to Jason, let's just say a huge congratulations to Sam and Laura. Well done, mate. It's so nice to see you happy. It's so nice to see Laura happy. You really deserve that happiness. And I'm so happy you guys met at a PA event.
Yeah, thank you so much for the warm praise there. It's an honour to be on the show with you guys. And yeah, we met, I think we'd known each other through some chat groups for a few years, maybe, prior to finally meeting at PA events. And we just hit it off. And from there, yeah, love sprang. And it's all down to you, Mark. You are the architect of my joy.
Thank you for that, Sam. I wish I could have been at the wedding, but obviously, due to all the COVID malarkey, there wasn't a massive wedding. But when you can hold a suitable reception with all your friends, I hope to be there. And obviously, I am overwhelmingly happy for you both. And I'm just looking forward to the pitter-patter of tiny Towler feet when it eventually happens. But before we give you your proper introduction, because that's not your proper introduction, I've got some even better to say about you when we get the show started properly. But before we do that, Jason, my friend, what have you been up to this week, and who is on tap?
Well, this week has been a very busy week. In fact, a couple days ago, we just went over one of the new bills that the Democrats are bringing forward to be one of their, I guess, gambits. Once they get President Biden in office, so we'll see about that. There's some really amazing things and world-shaking things going on right now in the United States on all sides. But a big, enormous congratulations to Sam. This was the guy, ladies and gentlemen, that I said I met this really great guy when I was among all the great people that I met when I was in the UK. And he was amazing. And that was the guy I was referring to. So here he is, Sam. So congratulations, brother. It's great to be on the show with you and to be able to talk openly with you in these matters, especially in these dark times.
I had a great drive back to the airport with you when I dropped you off, and as explaining how the English countryside worked, why we drive on the left. Generally, yeah, and we'd love to have you back in the country at some point soon, and we can really show you what the country's about rather than just a conference hall.
Oh, I cannot wait! I cannot wait for it, folks. At the breakfast, I said I got to go to the airport. And I don't know if anybody will be able to take me. This guy jumped right up. Sam was just like, "I'll take you." I'm in the middle of everything, and I don't know. I'm not going to say much more about what might have been or might not have been going on in his life there at the moment. But he just in the middle of all of that, he's like, "I will drive you to the airport and back." So I mean, really a great guy, and so glad to have you here. It's been a crazy week, but we have TAP coming up on Friday. TAP is going to be at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The garage party, which is normally at 7, is going to be moved up to 5:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're going to be playing the great Mr. Jared George's first song on that tap that he is releasing today to the public. And that will premiere at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. It's at 6, I believe. And I will drop the link in the live chat today a couple of times, 6 today at Eastern Standard Time. Jared's musical debut, and it's over on his channel. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody across the United States. I'll pass it back so we can get into the show.
Excellent. Well, we're going to give Sam his proper introduction now, but before we do, just a quick reminder to everyone, please send out a link to this show. I am no longer on Twitter. I have been taken off finally. They finally got rid of me. I have finally been taken to the gulag where I am not allowed to speak to the 60,000 people that followed me and enjoyed my tweets. Well, that's actually underplaying. I used to get about 12 million Twitter views per month. So please, please do send out the link, because we've got 1,500, nearly 1,600 people watching on DLive. We'll have many more watching on Radio Albion, but this man deserves a special audience. Now, starting to talk about Sam, you may have noticed in the background every week, I put something different. And it's always, or it's usually, a different computer game. And this week, I don't have one game, I have three games. I have the original Doom that was released on the Super Nintendo a long time ago. And yes, I beat it on the Super Nintendo at a mighty 12 frames per second. I have Doom 3 on the Xbox 360. And I also have Doom 2016, the absolute masterpiece on the Nintendo Switch. And I love Doom. But why am I talking about Doom when I should be talking about Sam? Well, I'm leading to something here. There are many, many protagonists. There are many heroes out there, many action heroes, and a lot of them have an awful lot to say. A lot of them have very big mouths and they have well-known catchphrases. However, the Doomslayer, the Silent Marine, who walks through those moon bases and goes to hell and back and rips and tears his way through countless demonic hordes, he doesn't say a word. He's just a silent machine. And up until this point, I would have to say, if Sam was any hero, he is the mighty Doomslayer. He's that silent machine that rips and tears his way through Antifa. Because when the vile hordes of Antifa turned up and tried to upset a PA event, this is the man who single-handedly, silently ripped and tore his way through the Antifa hordes and sent them packing. This is the nationalist Doomslayer. He is an incredible man. He is a silent, up until now, a silent hero of this movement. He's a really nice guy. He's a wonderful friend. He does an incredible job as Yorkshire organizer. And I am so, so proud to have him on the show tonight. I just wish Jason had had a black shirt on as well. Then it would have been a trio. This man even has an incredible sense of dress. Oh, and did I mention he also has a lovely wife too? Sam, please tell us a bit about yourself. Please talk about the excellent work you're doing from PA and tell us how we can contribute to that work and how we can help you, my friend.
That was an impressive introduction. They're going to be really surprised when they show up and find out I'm only 6'2" and not 7 foot, a towering beast of a man. But thank you so much. I mean, obviously, in that regard, it was a self-defense situation. There was only as much ripping and tearing as needed to be done. In terms of support, the best thing you can do is show up to PA events. We've now got organizers up and down the country. I think the only area we're missing is the Northeast. And they're all great guys. I've met every single one of them in person and spent that time with them. I'd consider them friends. And we have a great time at all events. Obviously, we've been pushing through during the lockdown and working to our limits with what we can do in terms of bringing people together and then also activities. So even when we had that brief respite after the summer of no lockdown, there was a flurry of activity before we were locked back down again. And now we're back to hiking, picnics, stuff like that. There's, you know, everything we can do to bring nationalists together, we are doing. And if you can attend, that's what drives us. As we keep seeing every week, every month, these meetings get bigger and better. We've got women, children, men, fathers, mothers. It's fantastic. And it's great to see the kind of people who think the way you do as well. It's easy to get blackpilled in this thing. And as whenever I go to an event, whenever I meet other nationalists, I'm white-pilled. And that carries me through to the next week when I meet another bunch of them. And they, again, brilliant people. I'll pass it back.
I didn't realize you're only 6'2". Because I'm only just over 5 foot, you look a lot taller, you see.
Yeah, well.
Now, you have got a nice big cup of tea there. Is that Grandma Towler's tea?
The only. Nothing else would stand in this house. It would burst into flames as soon as it crosses the threshold if it was anything other than Grandma Towler's.
Well, that's the other thing that you've been up to, and that's the next thing I've got to ask you about, because when you aren't ripping and tearing your way through the Antifa mob, you are busy packaging tea. Now, I couldn't believe it when it sold out in 5 hours, but for all of Grandma Towler's tea to have sold out on the first day within 5 hours of being released, that was incredible. And Laura's obviously got a huge, huge amount of praise, and rightly so, for the incredible work she's done at building that brand, on the designs, on finding a tea supplier, on the packaging, and all the other things that she's done. But you deserve a huge amount of praise also, because you were one of the people who has been working tirelessly over the past few days to make sure everyone got their tea in a timely fashion. How does it feel to be part of a project like that? And how much hard work was it?
It was amazing. It was absolutely fantastic. Prior to the launch, I'd booked off 2 days unpaid from work because obviously I'd run out of holiday. And I was like, I knew this was going to be huge. Laura was a bit more pessimistic. She thought, oh, you know, maybe we'll sell, you know, 70 packets, 80 packets, something like that. And I was convinced first day, sell out. There's no way this wasn't going to sell out immediately. And yeah, I was correct. I was at work on the Wednesday, and by the time I finished and checked my phone, she was saying we'd, from the 30 sales she'd had at lunchtime, it was now sold out, which was amazing. And I still couldn't believe it. And as soon as we got home, our kitchen was just full of tea bags. And I cleared the tabletops and everything, and I was setting out the kind of organization of which it's like, you know, tea's going to come in here. We set it aside, we find the stock, then it comes to here. That's when it's packaged. And then here label goes on, and then from there into the back of my van, and we took it down the post office. And I think Laura posted a picture of the back of my van. That was 150 parcels that were going out, and they've gone out all the way from Alaska to Australia. We've gone worldwide on that first day, which was crazy. I can't thank everyone enough for the support and the kind of show of what's possible within this community. This won't be the first nationalist business to launch within the kind of PA sphere. I think there's going to be plenty more who see this, take it as inspiration, and think this is a viable business opportunity lying, you know, in everything. There's so many things that we buy on a daily basis, and because we have to, we buy them from anti-white organizations. So why not make a white positive organization of your own and sell these things to your people?
Well, I couldn't agree more. It fills my heart with joy that this has happened. And I've been talking to a few people about this privately. Nationalists always have this really, really horrible fashion of taking a beating, taking a loss, and simply taking it on the chin. We tend to get in a situation where if something doesn't go our way, we believe that walking away with a head held high, acting with a degree of stoicism is the best way to behave. We believe that shows emotional maturity and strength. Now, the left don't do that. The left tend to get what they want, and they tend to fight back very effectively, because every time something doesn't go their way, they organize in many ways against it. And I think what Laura's done here is absolutely superb, because rather than just take the loss, rather than just being told not to buy tea from Yorkshire Tea, rather than just being put in her place, as some people would have been, she's actually created an alternative, something that people can actually support, which is outside of the mainstream, which is outside of the system. And as you so rightly said, we have to buy certain things in our life. We have to buy tea. We have to buy groceries. You have to have an electricity supplier or a mobile phone supplier. You have to have services. You have to eat food, and you have to get all of those from certain providers. And for her to actually come up with something that people use on a daily basis, and now they have an option to buy that something, in this case tea, outside of the system and give the profits to a good cause, that is the way to fight back. And in the past, I've always seen a lot of talk about nationalists doing things like this, but never before have I seen it put into such incredible action. This isn't just merchandise. This isn't just a mug with PA on it or a t-shirt or a one-off purchase. This is something that you can buy again and again and again. This is something that you can buy on a weekly basis and substitute for your regular tea, which is part of the system. And I think that's absolutely so very important. And thank you so much, Sam, for getting involved and helping with all this. And also thank you to both you and Laura for doing this, because lots of people come to me and they have ideas and they want me to do the idea for them. They, well, you should do this. But you guys, the work you do is absolutely incredible, and you take so much stress and so much weight off my shoulders. And pivoting slightly to the other good work you do with PA, Yorkshire is one of the most active regions. It's like you're doing something, what is it, every other weekend?
I try for every weekend, but occasionally there are other family commitments and stuff like that, so I might have to skip a week. But over the summer period, I think it was almost every weekend. I've just, if there's free time, I'm doing PA events, basically.
Well, I think your dedication, it really is second to none. It's fantastic. But some of your events have been truly, truly inspirational. There was one particular event. Obviously, I can't attend weekend events a lot of the time because I have family commitments now with my little girl. I obviously work very hard through the week, and often Saturday and Sunday is family time. But there was one, and also she doesn't travel particularly well, so when you do things a little bit further afield, the last thing you want to be doing is putting Sophia in the car seat. It's like a recipe for utter disaster. But one of the things you did, I really like the range of events you do. Outdoor events, you do dining events. But one particular event that I'd like you to tell the audience about is the foraging event. I think that was particularly special. Will you tell us a bit about that?
Oh, that was fantastic. Yeah. One of our attendees had put me in touch with someone who he's a professional forager, basically. He kindly donated his time. He normally runs very small groups. The attendance on the day was between 25 and 30 people out in, I think it was just north of Halifax. The area was perfect. It was picked by a local attendee, and he said this will be ideal. The forager recommended riversides, woodland, that kind of thing. And we set about from the start point, and we found, I never realized how many mushrooms I just walk past every day. It's like, as soon as you go out there and you look, I'm looking for mushrooms, you find them everywhere. They're like just tree stumps covered in mushrooms that you didn't see prior. And there were some really interesting ones that the guy was, it was fascinating. He knew all like the Latin names for them as well. And I think he was telling us how there's like 20,000 variants of mushrooms. I think only 600 of them are edible, and only 20 of those are actually worth eating. So you've really got a lot of room to go wrong. So mainly it was about identifying which ones poisonous, which ones aren't. But there was this one fascinating mushroom that it's brown on top and it grows on the side of a tree, but you pull it off and it's got a soft underside. And what you can do is cut a strip of it, and on the inside it's actually an antiseptic. And he was saying, if you ever get wound, like cut yourself in the woods or whatever, what you can do is pick this mushroom, cut off a strip, pack the wound, and you just wrap it around, and it actually sticks to itself. And essentially, you've got an entirely natural pasta. And it was like just stuff like that was amazing. And we fit after the walk, we fried up a bunch of those mushrooms. I provided a barbecue for everyone who attended. And we dragged the barbecue out to a clifftop. And we had this amazing view over a valley. And we were just there. And it's quite bizarre because obviously during lockdown, no one's seeing their friends or whatever. So to have, I think a few people had left by that point, but 15 people on the side of a cliff just having a barbecue felt like a revolutionary act almost. But it was really nice. Then we fried up some of the mushrooms and it was just a fantastic day. And everyone really enjoyed it. That's probably been one of my favorite events. Maybe the paintballing as well was another one that I really enjoyed. I think you attended that one. Laura's got bruises to attest to your your riffing and tearing on the day.
Yeah, I'm quite a fan of mushrooms, and I've actually got an app on my phone that helps you identify whether the mushroom you are looking at is edible or not. And there are a few, I think there's about 10 mushrooms in the UK that can actually kill you. So if you are out foraging for mushrooms, do make sure you are very, very careful. Now, I've never actually picked any mushrooms from the forest floor. Generally speaking, the more edible ones are usually grow in meadows and they're white with a certain kind of frill underneath, and you can tell whether they're edible actually by the scent. If they smell like a mushroom that you get in the supermarket, generally speaking, that means you can eat them. Whereas if they've got a slightly more sort of bitter scent, and if they taste acidic at all, if you put them in your mouth, that is generally a very, very bad sign. So just warning people, don't just go picking any old mushroom, because can be a bit of a disaster, and we don't want any mishaps. But I do think weekends like that are very important. Camping, bush skills, identifying things you can eat, brilliant. And to do that as a team, PA team building, absolutely, absolutely phenomenal. Jason, do you have any questions for Sam?
Well, the first thing I want to know is, I'll just say that for good old Sam here, I had to have a wardrobe change. But I leave the office and I come back, and we're talking about shrooms. And I thought maybe I had come back to the wrong show. I thought we had been talking about something completely different. But okay, if we're on shrooms, we could do that. No, I do want to add that this is a magnificent attitude. It's a way of life that Sam is living, and Laura, and it's so wonderful that these two people have come together because they have that same sort of attitude, absolutely perfect for each other. It's an attitude of life. It's when people, we hear about it all the time. I know Mark has dealt with it a bunch. People come and say, well, how do I get in shape? I don't know how to stay. And what they want from us, it's the exact same thing with nationalism. It's the exact same thing with service to white well-being. What they want is, they want some like quick fix. They want you to just say, well, just do X, and then suddenly you're going to be, you know, shredded like a machine, and you'll be able to tear through the anti-whites who call themselves Antifa, like Sam here. But that's not the case. You have to have an attitude. It is a state of being, a state of living. And so what is commonly referred to as conservatives or these antique, I don't know if I created this last night as I was lying in bed, but antique nationalism, these people who just want to look to the past always and then imitate the vehicles that have already been defeated by anti-whiteism. These folks, they come forward, they want this quick fix, they want something simple. They have learned over time to be stoic in defeat. They have learned over time, as Mark said, with the stoicism, just stiff upper lip, chin held high, they've learned to be good losers. In the United States, it's absolutely despicable and disgusting, drives a lot of people away from the old school nationalism, patriotism, conservatism. Instead, we need to have the exact same attitude. So I just want to laud with this moment right here, once again, Sam and Laura and their attitude it needs to be the attitude of all of us in service to white well-being, that when we are metaphorically punched, and if we are physically actually assaulted, we fight back, we defend ourselves, and we do so with joy in our heart, we do so with joy, with a clear mind, thinking strategically. And this example of the tea is splendid, and it should be the kind of story that we tell again and again. I know in business, we hear these wonderful stories about guys who came in And they had the right attitude and the tenacity, and they stuck with it, and then they suddenly made it big. And you hear those stories again and again to inspire folks who are new, you know, neophytes to the cause, or new in age, quite young. And this needs to be one of those stories that is told again and again. And more importantly, live this example as Sam and Laura are living this example. So I guess, Sam, aside from eating a bunch of wild mushrooms and making them into plasters, I think you all call them over there, is there any advice that you would give folks right now? Because what I just said, they're saying, okay, Jason just set a bunch of goals, but how do we get there? Is there any advice, any sort of thought process that you have when these sorts of things happen, or after these sorts of things happen, like with the actual physical attack, or Laura being attacked by these craven anti-white bastards at this tea company? What's the kind of attitude to have then? How do you center yourself and then move forward productively?
Move forward productively. I think it was something I'd been bracing for since accepting the role as Yorkshire organizer. I knew I was going to be a target and I would be attacked. And obviously, well before becoming Yorkshire organizer, I'd been previously doxed before, lost a job because of that. And it was like kind of, it's not something. When it first happens, cold sweat, you're kind of like, oh my God, my life's been ruined. And it's like you are just flipped, turned upside down, and it feels like there's going to be no way out, until you realize that Hope Not Hate, Antifa, they don't actually have much of an audience. You're not going to walk down the street and someone's going to attack you. It's like, no, there's people who are looking for you and they might attack you, but the average person probably agrees with you. I know the more and more people I talk to, and I talk to a lot more people now, everyone's on board. They don't necessarily have the vocabulary to express it, but they are on board. Our ideas are the prevailing ideas of a white country. Everyone agrees with this stuff. No one, We Were Never Asked showed that it was like, I think the high 70%. And it's like, and then the other 20% were just kind of a bit nervous about answering. But we've just got to keep pushing, because we know we're right. The people who attack us, they attack us because that's all that they've got. When they saw our meetings, and they could have been observing us for a number of months and seeing, it's like from our first meeting was 20 people, and then it's only gone bigger from there. And it's never gone below 10 or so, I think, for one of our weekly meets. And it's like, they don't have the numbers to combat that. And they don't have enough people who are that energetic about being anti-white. It's like being anti-white now is very much, it's kind of passive. You're just allowed to if you just go along with the flow, you're anti-white. But to make a stand against it is proactive. And then also to really hunt down the people who are pro-white, you've got to be a bit tapped. And that's what we see through Antifa. They are damaged people who are very, very sick. And it's knowing, it's pitying them rather than being scared of them, because that's all you can do. It's like, I'm not going to be scared. It's like, I refuse to be scared. And they can pressure, you know, they can post pictures of me. It's like, oh, here he is. And it's like, yeah, it's a picture with me and my wife. We're both smiling, and we're about to go and meet 30 other nationalists and go foraging. It's like, all right. It's like, what is there to fear when everyone I come across agrees with me? It's like, it's them who come across normal people and fear them. I don't.
I just very quickly, I know Mark's getting ready to jump in and move on to the next thing, but I want everybody to just to put a final word on this. There are names right now being written in the history books. You don't see those books just yet. You don't see those pages just yet. You don't see those names just yet, but there are nonetheless names being written in history books. And these will be the people who will be remembered for recapturing the destiny of Western kind. I can tell you right now, Sam and Laura's names are going to be there. Mark Collett's name is going to be there. Is yours?
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone has an opportunity to get involved. We're getting started. It's been a year now for PA, and it's just accelerating so fast. And there's just more and more opportunities for you to be a bigger part of a community. And that's what we're doing. We are building a community. You can't just rely on it to happen. You might not know your neighbors, but you can know people within this thing. And I've got lifelong friends who I've made through this community. I'll pass it back to Mark.
No, it's very, very wise words and very, very heartening words as well, because I gave my speech at the last PA conference about the importance of real world communities, about what can come of actually meeting, of having face-to-face interactions, of sitting in a room with people, of shaking hands with people, of having proper human interactions. And you are living proof of the importance of that and the success of that, not least because you've married somebody that you met at an event, but also because now as an organizer, you're bringing people together, and you are not just involved in PA as an organizer, you're also involved helping people with their health and fitness. You have a great fitness regime. Now, I want to talk a little bit about this, because when you were thrashing those three degenerate miscreants, what was going through your mind other than absolute pleasure? Because you have been very, very, very committed to staying fit and to boxing. And I get a lot of people write to me, actually, and since your heroic stand against the massed ranks of the filthy degenerate hordes, people have been writing to me saying, what's your advice if something like that happens? And I've got some advice to give, but since you were the man on the front line, how did it feel? And what's your advice?
I've always been into my gym since I was about 19, 20. And then over the last year or so, I've been training boxing. I've got a really good coach who's been our guy who's been training us. And you just kind of fall back on instinct when it actually happens. But about halfway through, I realized I had the biggest grin on my face. And afterwards, I realized that's probably attributed to the fact that we very rarely get to see our attackers in person. There's a lot of people on Twitter, there's a lot of politicians, there's a lot of anti-whites all over the place who they're either in your inbox or in your replies. And I see on Twitter people kind of going back and forth, and it's like it immediately descends with these people into a kind of, I know you are, but what am I? You know, the kind of arguments that when you're a kid just made you so furious. Like, so it's like, I know you are, but what am I? And you're like, oh my God. And it's like to actually have three of these people come across the road towards me, it was like, oh, finally, oh, we can actually solve this. It's like, and if it became a conflict like that, where it's like, you know, you actually, everyone on Twitter had to have, instead of just these bickering back and forth, an actual physical fight, it's like, well, no one would be saying half these things to each other. How many arguments online could just be resolved by actually speaking to the person and understanding the tone of their voice or something like that? I think the day before I went out leafleting, where when we got attacked, we'd been drilling like kicks like to the legs. That just went completely out of my mind. It was purely just cover up and just hang on. I think from what I could tell, they seem to have some training, probably similar level to me, and it paid off in dividends. I cannot think of a better use of my time for the last year than going to those boxing classes. And I think everyone should get involved in it, especially the men. The men, you should know how to throw a punch and how to take one as well. Because I caught one square in the nose and it barely fazed me. And it's because I'd been taking them for the last year. So you kind of get inured to it, and it becomes another one. You just keep coming back, and even bloody nose, I still have a big grin on my face, and you can see it kind of rattled them. And then once a local person came out and they were, you know, shouting that they'd called the police, they kind of just looked at each other and scattered, because they knew they weren't going to get the better. And they want a quick attack. They're like vultures or coyotes, you know. They want just to get in there, get you done, and then get out, because they're not strong. They rely on numbers. They thought 3-on-1. All right, cool, we'll be sound here. And they weren't. And I think I've heard stories of old BNP activists and stuff like that kind of staring down huge groups of Antifa, and then just like five of them standing shoulder to shoulder was enough to make them just second guess themselves, maybe not today. And I think that's something we're going to need going forward as well, because we're only going to get bigger, and that's going to make us bigger targets. But we do everything we can. The organisers, we've all been talking about better security, how best to avoid this in the future, so that ideally there's no conflict at all, or there's just like numbers where, like with the conferences, it's 200 people, so they're not going to even think about attacking something like that.
I will add really quickly, I know Mark's going to jump in, and that is that, first of all, the most important thing Sam said, everybody, is you do your best to avoid physical conflict. A real man gets away from physical conflict when he can, especially when he's with his girlfriend, his wife, and in every single case, if you have children present, you do everything you can to get away, because it is a lifelong trauma for women and children to have to, especially children, to have to witness adult men fighting. It's violent. Things fly all over the place. Bones break. It's you don't want to. So having said that, though, and the only thing I'll add, because this could be a whole show about how to handle these situations, the only thing I'll just tack into it is, so often because these anti-whites attack in a group, as Sam is pointing out here, the best defense when they attack as a group, or when any group is attacking an individual, is to really go hard at the one, at one of them, any one of them, at any time. Be willing to shift it from one to the next, because it causes in them the idea that I don't want to be the one that he gets hold of. I don't want to be the one that he ruins. I don't want to be the one who has a broken jaw or the teeth knocked out or the broken nose or neck or whatever it might be. So you see these videos where you see these people, they fold up, the group comes in, they fold up, they go to the ground, and then the animal, anti-white animals, just attack. Stay up, get one of them. You're going to get blows from other directions, but get one of them and start ruining that individual. And then spin to the next one that's close to you. Get a hold of that one and begin ruining that one. And you have a far better chance of surviving the attack, coming out of it much better, than if you had just folded up and tried to take the blows and get away. Mark.
Well, I want to throw a few things in here, because recently there's been a rise of mixed martial arts. And a lot of people really, really keep banging on about how brilliant MMA is, how wonderful grappling is, how MMA is the big thing. And boxing seems to have taken a little bit of a back seat in terms of popular culture to MMA, and specifically to UFC. Now, there's still a lot more money in boxing worldwide than there is in UFC. Boxers get paid far, far more, and big boxing matches are far more widely viewed. But MMA is taking more of a center stage, especially with Conor McGregor rising to prevalence, although his life's now a bit of a car crash, isn't it? He's gone off the rails. But what I want to say is, don't be sucked in to the MMA hype. Don't start listening to people that you want to get yourself down to the MMA gym. Get yourself to the boxing gym. If you actually think you are going to get into some form of street conflict, my advice is box. Because boxing and striking is the fundamental part of combat. And striking, as in somebody who can throw a punch, somebody who's good at that, somebody who's a good striker, stays on their feet. And when you're in a conflict, like Sam was a few weeks ago, staying on your feet is absolutely crucial. And boxing is all about footwork. It's all about staying on your toes. It's all about very, very rapid movement and being able to spot a punch coming and returning fire without ending up in a grapple or going to the ground. Now, grappling is all well and good if you're in a cage and there's only two of you. But if you're in a group and there's five of you and five of them, or there's three of them and one of you, or if it's some form of situation where you are having to worry about more than one person and you go to the ground, that can be a fatal mistake. And it doesn't matter how brilliantly you can apply a headlock, how brilliantly you can apply an armbar, how quickly you think you can cut off the oxygen to someone. it doesn't matter, because once you're on the floor, you cannot maneuver quickly, you cannot dodge, and if there's someone else who is free to send blows your way, you are largely undefended. And a couple of kicks to the head, and it can be good night. And Sam and the lads he trains with do everything the right way. They are down at the boxing gym. I used to go boxing twice a week. I absolutely loved it until I got thrown out of the boxing gym when they discovered who I was. The guy who ran that gym, absolute coward, little complete little rat, threw me out when he Googled me. Absolutely despicable. I'd never done anything wrong there. I'd always paid my dues. I'd always been polite to everybody. But I used to absolutely love boxing. But I went boxing because it's something that keeps you on your toes, and it's good stand-up. It's the fundamentals of stand-up combat. Now, the other thing that you've got to look at with boxing and MMA is a lot of the techniques employed with MMA, especially with grappling, are techniques that are actually quite difficult to learn. The same with these stupid women's self-defense courses. If you're a woman and you go to one of these stupid self-defense courses, you're absolutely wasting your time. They're a load of nonsense. They'll throw you, they'll show you a few crazy throws and counterbalance techniques, but those things don't work. They don't work in a real fight, especially if you've only done them once. Now, unless you're going to the MMA gym and you're doing it on a daily basis and it becomes second nature to roll somebody up in a certain hold or grappling technique, it's very hard to remember that in actually the heat of combat, whereas punching comes very, very naturally. And going to the boxing gym, you don't have to go 4 or 5 times a week. Once a week, we'll see a genuine improvement in what you can do. And it's also, and I've done a lot of different sports, the two hardest sports I've ever done are boxing and mountain biking. Both of those are absolute killers. But boxing is one of the most intense because it's basically 12 sprints. And when I used to do boxing, we would do between 12 and 15 2-minute rounds on bags and then spar afterwards. And that's incredible. By the time you come out, you are dripping wet. And as I say, it's like you've done a marathon of sprints. And it doesn't sound like long when you're saying it now, 2 minutes. But 2 minutes of work on a bag, and if you are not physically fit and able, you will be absolutely dying on your feet. So my advice is go boxing and learn techniques that come very naturally, that aren't too advanced, and keep you stood up. Because as Jason said, if things do take a turn for the worse, you might be fighting one guy and you might be doing pretty well. But if 5 of his mates come around the corner, that might be the time you say to yourself, yeah, this is going to go pretty south pretty quick if I don't get away from here. But if you're rolling around with him on the ground, you're finished. If you're still on your feet, if you've still got distance between you and your opponent, you have far, far more options. What do you guys think to that advice? Am I getting it right, or have I missed some fundamentals?
No, I think, once you get in that situation, the kind of lizard brain takes over, and you end up just kind of falling back on what comes naturally, which is throwing hands. Was it even while I was fighting, just throwing a few counter punches, it's all of a sudden it puts them on the back foot. Then they're not expecting conflict. They're bullies, essentially. Mm-hmm. And as we all know from school, running to teacher isn't going to help. You need to give them a sock in the face. And that's the only way you're going to stop bullies, when they actually come for you. Ideally, though, you present such an intimidating kind of force that the bullies don't even look at you as someone they can attack.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I agree with all of that. Now, I may, because of purposes of lawsuits in the United States, may or may not be trained in one or more forms of combat. Now, fighting and training in, I'll just absolutely underscore everything that Mark and Sam just had to say. fighting and being in an actual fight is immensely different. And I started, by the way, I had somebody ask, has Jason ever been in a fight? I guess they haven't read Crucible. I started getting jumped at 11 years of age. So I've been in more than a few, more than fingers and toes that you have, even if you're deformed and you have quite a few more. But fighting and training are two totally different things. Like Mark is talking about, when you are trained, a trained competitor to fight, you go into a ring, you're prepared that there's going for conflict, you're prepared for there to be a referee there, you're prepared for things to be stopped. That's not how the real world works at all. A real fight, it doesn't matter who the better fighter is in the real world. In case you're wondering, in case you haven't been in very, very many fights in your life, it's not won or rarely won by the person who's the best fighter. It's won by, or rather, let me rephrase, it's lost by the person who gets hurt badly first, because there's no one there to break it up. If you get hurt really bad and the other person keeps pouring it on, you've lost the fight no matter how much you've trained in your life. And when it comes right down to it, it's going to be quick. You have to injure the person quickly, and you have to pour it on the person who's attacking you. You need to do, like Mark said, you need to be in shape to be able to do this. And all of the repertoire of all of the wonderful little moves that you can learn, the vast spectrum of all of that just disappears in those moments. It's the very simple striking, a tiny bit of kicking and kneeing and this sort of thing, but the up-close striking and grabbing hold of people, I tell you, there's nothing more than I like than to get a hold of an anti-white. A couple times where they've cold-cocked me and then get a hold of them, and it's a wonderful thing. If you've ever watched American, you know, the ice hockey, you get a hold of somebody and you can really start working on them. And so that's the reality of an actual fight. You don't want to be the person who gets hurt badly first, because it doesn't matter how many hours you spend in the gym, you're losing if they keep pouring it on at that point.
Yeah, so I was wondering, Jason, can you verify that the new firearms bill that Biden's bringing in, do you have to register your hands as lethal weapons?
they might actually, the kind of things that they are bringing forward, the bills, and we've been sharing them, and I don't know when the next time I will be doing a going free, definitely Sunday, I don't know, maybe sooner because of how crazy things are getting. But yeah, they are moving forward, and they might actually try to force us to register. If you ever defend yourself as a somebody who's white positive, then you go straight to jail. Who knows? But I appreciate that.
Well, pivoting a little bit away from that, we've seen a few people over the last couple of days here in the UK, or last weekend to be specific, take a little bit of a beating. Now, those people weren't PA members. I don't know if they're PA supporters, but they certainly weren't people that we know were affiliated with PA in any way. But we have seen people taking a bit of a thrashing. And the people taking a thrashing were people at anti-lockdown protests. Now, I don't know whether you guys have seen the newspaper articles, but today there was actually an elderly woman. And this elderly woman was basically picked up, manhandled, I think she was 72 years old, by three police officers. And she was hurled in the back of a police van. And absolutely, absolutely despicable. And one thing that I think we need to talk about is the brutality that the police are meeting out against generally white people standing up against this lockdown. Now, obviously, this is in stark contrast to the way they treated Black Lives Matter rioters who were actually attacking the police. They took a knee for Black Lives Matter rioters. Now, I remember seeing Black Lives Matter rioters attack police horses outside Downing Street, and I didn't see any people, especially not elderly people, picked up and hurled in the back of police vans. But we saw this in Britain over the last few days, and there was a particularly harrowing case, which was in Liverpool. It's actually on the graphic for this week's show, and it shows a man who has been wrestled to the ground by several officers wearing COVID face masks, and they appear to have him in some kind of chokehold or headlock, which is absolutely incredible. Now, I'm just throwing this out there, but if a white police officer had got a black protester at a Black Lives Matter event in some form of chokehold or headlock as he was arresting him. Can you imagine what would have happened? Can you imagine the way the press would have talked about that? Can you imagine the riots? Can you imagine the celebrities going crazy? Piers Morgan, he would have been as red as a beetroot, slamming his fist on the desk on Good Morning Britain. Boris Johnson would have been making a heartfelt plea for calm and talking about investigations. That vile Cressida Dick, she would have been talking about how the police need to stamp out institutionalized racism. The officer in question would have been forced to resign his position or face suspension and expulsion from the force. But obviously, as this is a white guy standing up against the COVID lockdown, nothing happened. Now, I think this is absolutely scandalous. And obviously, when you're dealing with the police, there is very little you can do, because if you fight back or you show any form of resistance, the penalties against you are much, much harsher when it does go to court. But have you seen this stuff, guys? Sam, have you seen any of these news articles? And if so, what do you think of them?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of it. And it seems to they're really cracking down on the anti-lockdown protests at the moment with just insane amounts of force. I think one of the first things I saw was Jeremy Corbyn's brother, who I think is something like 80 years old, and he just gets just tackled, just like absolutely nailed by the police officer. But I think this is part of a wider project with the police force. They're essentially programming them to see everything as a threat. At the moment, if they're surrounded by their own countrymen, they see them as a threat. You can be protesting against lockdown, against climate change. It doesn't matter. They will bring the hammer down on you. It's part of a broader kind of hybrid warfare thing that's going on at the moment. It's like just the a woman. It's like, what police officer is threatened by someone who looks like that? And it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, three on them. It's like, in case what? She starts turning up, biting, going after people. It's insane. And I think the masks is only helping kind of almost dehumanize our police force. You can't see the looks on the faces or anything. It's like these just kind of faceless drones who just go out there, pick a target, take them down, and then haul them off in the back of a van. I think there was a 19-year-old girl at a protest last week who was dragged out and shoved in the back of a van and just taken away. I think the police are riding a very dangerous line at the moment. They rely on the consent of the public, and at the moment, I don't think there's many in the public who are standing behind the police on any of this, which I think is why they're having to escalate force. Instead of policing through consent, it's policing through fear.
Well said, Sam. There is the law enforcement in the United States, across the West, has always been willing. Of course, they're going to do the will of those in power. And so what does this demonstrate to us? Finish the other sentences. They've always been willing to escalate to the point of victory over whoever the challenger was, whether that challenger was a murderer or mass murderer or a grandmother protesting something that the anti-whites would like to do to us across our civilization. You can go all the way back to after World War I in the United States, and you can see what the United States were willing to do to the bonus marchers, veterans who were promised bonuses, who were not given those bonuses. They were all white. And they came out to Washington, D.C. to protest, peacefully protest. They brought their families. They brought tents. They set up. They said they weren't going to leave until they received their bonuses. And what did the United States do? A white army, a white government sent out tanks and soldiers and fired with fully automatic weapons at these people. This is a demonstration of whether you can see it or not. You'll be able to see it from now on. This sort of thing is a demonstration of who is in power, what they want the outcomes to be. And we can see that when anyone who isn't anti-white enough, anyone who troubles an anti-white's objective to inflict injury on Western kind and Western civilization, they get out into the streets. They aren't handled with kid gloves. They're not going to be kneeled to. The people who are being kneeled to are the ones who are anti-white enough, the ones who are serving the interests of those who are actually in power, the anti-white oligarchs. That is how you immediately know who's in charge. So yeah, we're going to see a lot more of these sort of scenarios. Grandmothers objecting, and this has always been the case, objecting to what the government is doing. And you need to just remember whatever it might be, whether it's COVID-19 or whether it's a First Amendment issue in the United States or a speech issue generally or the right of self-defense, whatever it might be. These things get in the way of anti-whites doing what they want to do to Western kind and Western civilization. And you will see law enforcement as a consequence acting ruthlessly. Now, I know that in the UK, you all have a much better understanding of the law enforcement there. And of course, Mark has a very poor opinion of just about everybody in the law enforcement there. And I don't doubt it's like teaching in the United States, where you end up with almost never having a good teacher because it's self-selecting on top of being an environment where they are only looking for anti-whites. People are self-selecting themselves out when they're not radically anti-white enough. In the United States, you occasionally will have, I think probably a little bit more often than in the UK, a good guy who's an officer. We have a lot of people who are police officers, military personnel who are going free. They write me. The problem is, though, they receive these orders and there isn't an oppositional poll. They have to just go along with the orders, and they're obviously not going to beat on you, but the other police officers will. And this is only going to increase as the power of the anti-whites over our civilizations increases. And the final thought I'll leave with you all about this, and just a motivator, because as we know, fear is the ultimate motivator in all ways for the human animal. And that is this video of the German doctor who had the police show up for his opinion or his position, whatever it might have been relative to COVID-19. They rammed through his door on video, live video, while he's live streaming, with a battering ram, and then came upon him with weapons drawn, ready to roll, ready to fire, hot and ready, and ordered him on the floor for having an opinion that the anti-white oligarchs didn't like because it would trouble their objective. And that is where you have to be mentally, when it comes to all of this. You can't say, well, it's just because they don't like free speech. It's just because they don't like right to self-defense. It's just because this doctor, in every case, it is because those positions inhibit their ability to inflict harm on us and our civilization. That's the reality of the actions, the activities, the thoughts and objectives that they celebrate, the anti-white oligarchs. And I'll pass it back.
That's great. I just want to jump on the end as well, especially with that video there. You saw she seemed almost unconscious when they were lifting her into the van. But the best resistance that they had against the police was a guy in a suit complaining about his rights. And we need to get it through these people's heads that they're as much of a dissident as we are. Just because we're pro-white and they're just anti-lockdown, they need to understand if you're opposing the government, you will have these things happen to you. You essentially do not have rights if the government decides that you don't. In this case, that woman, it didn't matter about peaceful rights protests or anything like that. Get in the back of the van, we'll deal with it later. And as soon as they do that to one, that protest, everyone all of a sudden is like, oh, maybe I don't feel like getting arrested. This is why it's important to build communities and brotherhoods and tight-knit groups, because if you just go out to a lockdown protest and everyone's just an atomized individual who doesn't see the person next to them as a member of their race, as a brother, as a sister, then one of you is going to get coshed off the back of the head, dragged into a van, and you all just go, well, I guess we're done here for today. I'd rather not get arrested, and you all go home. It's like we need to make these people understand this is a civilizational conflict that we're in, and at the moment, the anti-whites are using police to control us. And pass it back.
Yeah, that guy in the suit, he was actually a member of parliament. That's probably the only reason he didn't get thrown in the back of the van. I cut the video off because it went to the part where they were talking about the incident in Parliament. He actually brought it up in Parliament, and obviously you couldn't hear the sound because people were talking over. I just wanted to show people the video. Also, we saw that charming advert before the video, one of those Christmas adverts, which is full of diversity. And when we say diversity, what we obviously mean is lacking in white people. Now, I've not actually seen that advert before with the black ballerina or the little black boy illuminating her. I didn't see many white people in that advert, though. And I have just released my yearly review of the Christmas adverts, and that is over on BitChute. I don't know what you guys think of the current crop of Christmas adverts. That's something to pivot on. I saw that people in the chat weren't too impressed with what has been termed as another jogger advert. But have you seen any of the Christmas adverts yet, Sam?
That MP, when he spoke out in Parliament, he got quite animated and he was very angry. He was then admonished by the Deputy Speaker of the House for basically showing too much emotion. So he saw a member of the public being assaulted by the police, got angry about it, and the best the government could do was say, can you keep play it cool, you know, do the whole right honourable friend bollocks and all that kind of stuff. They're quite happy to just fiddle while the country burns. And but yeah, to the adverts, I've caught a little bit of TV over the last week or so, and it is full on. Every advert is, I think Asda's got one with like some, I think he's some sort of Asian, but he's like bog-eyed. He's got weird hair. The kids look halfway retarded. It's like, it's really messed up. And then it's like, I saw one with Wallace and Gromit and I thought, oh, Wallace and Gromit. Good. It'll be trad. White woman opens the door. I'm like, all right, cool. Going well. They look through the window and the white woman is, I guess, in a relationship with a black man. These are all obviously clay, little clay models. So there's even interracial claymation going on in 2020. There is no escape.
You know, the thing about this, folks, is that you need to use this to help people go free. The power, and for so many years I've been talking about this, the power that the anti-whites wield by controlling or dominating the news and entertainment media, universities, government and the like, your church, et cetera, your lodges, community centers, the power that they wield there is not the kind of thing that we can contend with in the traditional ways. And sometimes this is people think that, well, what you might want to do is somehow have a judo type of move. Well, in judo, you with the power of the aggressor, you deflect the aggressor. What we need to do, and what we needed to do, and what we can do, is turn the power. It's sort of like judo plus, perhaps. Is turn the power of the aggressor, the victimizer, the anti-white. Turn that power into our power. And the way we do that is, all you have to do is tell people, and friends, family, and strangers, people in your circles of influence, that take a look at these commercials. They are white erasing us from our own civilization. When you put the focus on our people and what's being done to us, and then these people go home and they take a look at these adverts, they see them on television again and again and again. I've done this quite literally hundreds and hundreds of times with people over all of these years. You say, look, Here's how it works here. You'll be able to see it easily here. There's a bunch more to learn about what's going on. There's a way to heal from this. There's a way to understand what's going on in the world. Take a look at this. This is not by accident. There are boards, room boards that are of people who are making these decisions. Sometimes the ad firm is outside the company. Sometimes it's a department in the company. It goes through several layers. They specifically say, we are going to pair this non-white man with a white woman, or non-white woman with a white man. That's biological white erasure. Now, they also make the argument, the anti-whites, and you can have this on the tip of your tongue, that the reason why they have to make advertisements like this is because it is psychologically traumatizing to non-white people to not see themselves represented in the culture around them, in the stores, in the adverts, and all of this sort of thing. Of course, it's the kind of argument that they make, or the angle they make there, is tenuous at best. But if it's psychological abuse and psychologically harmful for them, then it is psychological abuse and psychologically harmful for us to not see ourselves, to always see that, well, if you are a white male, then it's always going to be better for the white female to be with a non-white male, because he's going to be happier. He's good. He's fun. He's more fun than you are. She's going to have a better life with him. And the same reversed for our women. It is psychological abuse for us. Do not make the mistake of going into, especially with somebody who is new, one of the vagues out there, making the mistake of going into and saying, why do I have to see all of the, and then name one of the non-white races? They're only, you know, 0.8% of this population, because then they come away from that thinking that you are an example of the anti-white narrative. You are an example of the villain in that story, and that everything else that they have learned about the villain in their story holds true for you. Instead, you point out that they are anti-whites are doing this intentionally. The premise to your discussion that they won't be lost on them, but won't have to be said, and is very powerful, is that you, our people, do not run society for white well-being. Now, the anti-white narrative lives on the premise that society is dominated by white people who are working for our well-being. And so therefore, there needs to be this big resistance against the regime. By talking about, without actually mentioning, that there is a malice aforethought to do this in the advertising, all of these companies are paying many millions and millions in the UK of pounds for this sort of advertising. You have sown the premise that white people are not in charge of this in the service to white well-being, doing things that are white positive for white people. They'll come away from it far more empowered than you could imagine. And here's what ends up happening. You have, and then I'll pass it right back, you have just equipped them with an act that they can't escape now, because their eyes are going to be open for it. And then the anti-whites themselves, in all of the tens of millions of pounds they spend in advertising, does the rest of the work for you. That is far more powerful than trying to use a bunch of data, use a bunch of facts, show them a bunch of dry spreadsheets, and try to convince them about, well, let me tell you who exactly are the owners and where they came from and what their agenda has been over the past 1,000 years or something like this. You then contend with a lifetime and your 5 minutes that you have to speak with them, a lifetime of education that they have received, most powerfully from entertainment. Instead, equip them with a tool that they can't escape from, and then you have the anti-whites do the entirety of the rest of the work for you.
Well, I thought we'd watch one of these Christmas adverts that's in the UK. This is the worst of them all, but mercifully, it's only 30 seconds long. Now,
why not?
This is the Morrison's seconds. Christmas advert. Now, all of the main retailers in the UK have got their comments turned off. And this one, well, Morrison's obviously didn't get the memo about turning off the comments. So I'm hoping that tonight we've got nearly 1,800 people watching here on DLive, and we'll have hundreds more watching on RadioAlbion.com. So here is the link to this particular video. I'm dropping it in the chat now, and you can see the video on the screen. You can look it up on YouTube. It's Morrison's Making Christmas Special. If we can get a few more dislikes on this video tonight, that would be fantastic, and maybe a few more comments. And we'll watch this video, and I'll stop it at several points. Here goes. And straight away, Santa is wearing a COVID mask. Play with me, I know a galaxy, and I can take you for a ride. Oh, who's coming home? Who's coming home? It's Mum, and yes, she works for the NHS. Of course she does. She's black and she works for the NHS. The message is clear, guys. If it wasn't for people like her, all white people in this country would be dead and there'd be no NHS. And she's getting a hero's welcome. There you have Grandma with her grandchild. They're having a dance. Note, it is not a nuclear family. The gay couple. Got to have a bit of that, haven't you? They're messing around with the roast potatoes, and now they're going to give each other a kiss at the dinner table. How heartwarming. A perfect nuclear family, but of course, not white. And here you've got it. the piece de resistance. You couldn't miss out, could you? Here you've got the non-white chappy, and there is his besotted missus. You've got to love it, haven't you? Because this is what Morrison's is selling. Forget groceries, guys. Morrison's doesn't want to sell you groceries this Christmas. Morrison's wants to sell you a multiracial COVID lockdown Christmas. And now for the breakdown. Here you got it, the black family, the gays, the black family again. Oh my God, there is so much diversity. It's like a diversity overload. Do you think you could have crammed more diversity into that advert? I don't. I think that's got to be possibly the most sickeningly diverse 30 seconds of my life. But remember, the comment section is open. The like to dislike ratio isn't nearly negative enough yet. The link to the video is in the live chat. And I'm saying to you guys, register your protest with Morrison's. Are you going to be doing your shopping at Morrison's this year, Sam?
Oh, God, no. No, thankfully, I try and shop local wherever I can. It felt 30 seconds. You feel like the guy in, Clockwork Orange, just like your eyes pinned open. Just like forced to take the anti-white abuse. It's like, especially the flash cuts at the end. Like, it's like, just in case you didn't miss it, here it is. It's like anti-white. So thank you. It's 30 seconds. I feel like I've been punched in the face. It's shocking. And to see every single shop advertising it. I mean, it's like when I first kind of awoke to nationalism and pro-white politics, stuff like that, there was the odd advert where it'd be black man, white woman. And if you tried to explain it to someone, they'd be able to point to plenty of adverts here and there that it wasn't happening in. Now it is literally every advert. If you're selling a sofa, you're going to be betting there's a black man and a white woman who are going to be sat on that sofa. If they're selling food, it's going to be gay dads who are serving it up for their adopted family, I presume. It's insane. And now if anyone's not seeing it, it's almost willful. They're really trying as hard as they can to stay naive to this kind of stuff. And I think for a lot of people, it's tempting. They want to just check out and just get on with their lives. But it's like it's coming to you. You cannot escape this. It's going to be coming to your door. And, it'll be police kicking it through when you try and have your Christmas dinner with more than four family members there or something, you know?
No, you're slightly wrong there, Sam. It'll be the police kicking through your door if you're having Christmas dinner with more than four white family members. Because I'll tell you what, if it's a black Christmas dinner, all they have to do is put on Black Lives Matter t-shirts and the police ain't coming anywhere near that house. They'll be having turkey for as long as they want. If it's a white family, though, expect the SWAT team rappelling down the house, coming through the bay window. The turkey will be on the floor and mum and dad will be face down in the carpet with the heckler and Cox to the side of their temples. That is Christmas for white families this year because of this COVID tyranny. And I am joking to a degree, but there is some truth in it because I can actually imagine this happening. There is absolutely no way the police would break up a black family gathering. It wouldn't happen. But if it's a white family gathering, it would happen. In the same way, we're all in black shirts and it's a bit of fun. But if we were to walk down the street advocating for people of European descent, all dressed in black shirts, the police would arrest us because it's against the law to wear political uniform. It's against the law for a political organization to have its members out on the streets in the same clothing. That is against the Public Order Act. Now, earlier this year, when a group called, I think it's called Forever Family, a black rights group, marched through the streets of Britain wearing what was militarized political uniform, berets, stab vests, all in black, the police stood and watched. Not only were they allowed to violate the lockdown, not only were they allowed to break the COVID rules, which white people weren't allowed to break, they were wearing political uniform and the police stood there and turned a blind eye. So if anyone tells you about white privilege, tell them to go and shove it, because that single clip illustrates that white privilege is a complete lie. These people are the ones that are privileged. We, the white people, the indigenous people of these islands, we are officially the underclass, especially in the eyes of the police. And spoiler alert, if you hadn't guessed, I really, really can't stand the police. And I'm not making any apologies for that. Can't stand them. And the police now are the enemy. They are openly the enemy. I'm not going to apologize for saying that. They are here to take away our rights. They are here as politicized officers to take away our rights. But let's do some of these super chats, because we do have a few super chats tonight. So let's get through them. Evidence violates terms of service. Gave $20. Thank you very much, my friend. And he said, I'm just going to move this over to the other window so it's easier for me to read. Just give me a couple of seconds. Said, much respect from America to my big brothers and sisters in England, Wales, Scotland, and Ireland. I believe in you, and I believe in all of us. Support Patriotic Alternative in the UK and the National Party in Ireland. Long live worldwide Europa. Well, thank you very much for that, my friend. That is very much appreciated. Syrup gave £5 and said, the Fash Wavers in the chat box have a question for Sam. What model of keyboard is sitting behind you?
What is it? It's a Roland FP10. Roland FP10.
Was that Laura I heard chirping in there?
Yeah, any opportunity to get on camera, she's about it. So.
Hi, Laura. Rory Herbert gave £3. She's even, not only are you now referred to as Mr. Towler, but she's even stream cucking you. Just butting in, stealing the limelight. Sam, yet again, defeating the Antifa, but brutally put in his place by his missus.
Well, Rory... truly simping in I defended my wife from physical attack, which only a simp would do.
Rory Herbert gave £3. Thank you very much. He said, dear Sam, I received my tea today. Thank you for all your hard work in this regard. Did you see the video I sent to Laura entitled Where There's Tea, There's Hope?
No, I haven't, but I'll make sure to have a look at it as soon as we're done here.
Galileo's Tongue gave $5 and said, Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Why are you even reading this, Mark? You're still reading it, aren't you? What's wrong with you, man? Stop now. Thank you for that. I don't know whether he's got a show tonight, but that is a funny super chat. And that week when that guy had that name, Peter Piper and the pickled pepper, I just couldn't say it. He left so many kind super chats, but I got his name muddled every time. Tonight I am on form. I am on a Red Bull spree today, so top of my game, I can tell you. But nowhere near the limit. I have been told by Chris from Patriotic Talk and Charlie Big Potatoes, well, actually neither of them, it's actually Chris's Mrs. Kerry, has informed me that it takes 120 cans of Red Bull to overdose. So I am well within the safety zone today, as I've only had a couple of cans. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you very much for the kind donation. She says, congratulations to Sam and Laura. The tea is really good. Just how I like it. Well, you have been getting lots of positive feedback, and that is more positive feedback from the lovely Serena, who is here every week. Serena, we love you, and we are looking forward to meeting you at the next PA conference. Blunderbuss gave $10. Thank you very much. And he said, so what about the kosher certification process for Grandma Towler's tea? Oy vey. Laura, Sam.
We've actually paid for it to be kosher certified 3 times over for maximum kosher. I think with our next batch, we've ascertained it is Rainforest Alliance certified, though. So we are not, it's just better for the environment, better for the people who are farming it and everything like that, because we are good people. We are nationalists and we are positive. We'll never be getting kosher certified. If anything, I'll chuck some pork in with the tea just to make it.
God, can you imagine if you produced the officially the only non-vegan, non-vegetarian, non-halal, non-kosher tea made from genuine pork product? That would be all kinds of epic. Can you imagine the amount of offense that would cause? And you just know, don't you? You just know that tea would end up being served to someone and cause the greatest outrage that there ever was. Your doors would be going off the hinges, very quickly, even quicker than the tea flies off the shelf. Right, next super chat. Celtic Advocate gave £5. Thank you very much, my friend. Very much appreciated. He said, can't think of a decent question, but wanted to donate anyway. Well, thank you very much. That is so appreciated. He says, cheers to you three for your great work for our people. Thank you, Celtic Advocate. Donations like this mean a great, great deal to me. Those people who give little and often, it really, really does add up. And honestly, it makes a difference. This is what puts food on the table for myself, my partner, and my beautiful daughter. And interestingly, talking about that, I was meant to say something to Jason earlier. Jason says you don't want to get into a fight in front of your child because it might scare them. I can tell you this now. If I ended up thrashing somebody in front of my daughter, she is the kind of child that would be hooting in laughter. She's a very, as for a little girl, she is very, very, what can I say, cantankerous and boisterous. At the moment, her favorite thing is dragons. She's got a book with a dragon in it. We bought her a second book with a dragon in it. She loves dragons. If you ask her what noise dragons make, she roars. She doesn't ever watch television. She doesn't have screen time. But the other day, I did find a clip on YouTube of one of the recent massive budget Godzilla films where Godzilla basically looks real. And it's a 30-second clip where Godzilla roars for the first time. He comes out of this mist by a Chinese market and just roars into the camera. And I showed her this, and I have never seen my daughter so captivated. She sat on my knee and she watched it, and me and my lady were watching her reaction, and she had wide eyes, and she just went, wow. And it was just the cutest thing ever. She absolutely loved it. And after that, she turned to her mummy and said, "Mummy, Ragan," which is her way of saying dragon. But she is already a big Godzilla fan. And I think if Dad went on some kind of anti-leftist rampage next to the pram, she would probably be loving it and roaring her little head off with happiness. Because, yeah, she's a mini collet. So good on you, Sophia. You're a little diamond. Kasari gave $5.5 and says, "Hail Mark, hail Jason, and hail Sam. Thank you for your honor and loyalty to our people. Take care and be well." Well, thank you very much, Kasari, for the $5. That is very, very kind of you.
Sorry, Mark, I just want to step in with Sophia. Laura's just reminded me when we came round to your house for, I think it was dinner or something we came round for, and you answered the door with Sophia in your arm, and she just seemed really kind of put off by us. Like, we were just like, "Hi, how are you doing?" And she just like, shook her head, took hold of the door, and closed it in our faces.
She did. This is a true story. Sam and Laura turn up, beaming smiles. "Hi, Sophia." Just went, "No."
Pushed the door. "Not today."
"Not today. Sorry, guys." She is like that, and she's also very, very funny. If she's ever in her mother's arms and she's getting a cuddle, and I go over and say, "Can it be a family cuddle?" and put my arms around both of them, she always looks at me, puts her hand up and pushes me back and goes, "No, no." It's like, I want all the cuddles for myself. That is our little terror. In fact, we've taken in the mornings to asking her each morning what she is today, whether she's a princess or whether she's a terror. And her answer used to generally be Terra, although now she believes herself to be more of a princess. But I think it's more of a case of her being Princess Terra, because the carnage she creates in the house on a daily basis is growing and growing as she gets older. And when she's making noise, she is a bad. But when she is very, very silent, that means she's up to something that transcends bad, like emptying all of our cooking oil all over the kitchen floor. That was a classic. That was the, actually it wasn't cooking oil, it was sesame oil. She bit the top off the sesame oil, attempted to drink some of it, spat it out, and when she realized it wasn't something that was tasty and good, it went all over the kitchen floor. That was a fun time for Dad, slipping around in that and attempting to clean it up. Richard Wagner gave $3 and said, what are your guys' thoughts on the 2006 American Renaissance schism between David Duke and Jared Taylor? Well, I don't want to turn this into a drama stream. I was actually at that particular conference there in the audience when Dr. David Duke got to his feet and made a very impassioned speech from the floor, pointing out to Jared and other attendees that, in fact, a certain Middle Eastern tribe played a disproportionate role in the West's decline. It was a very impassioned speech. And I've got to say, I think the fact that caused a bit of a schism between them is quite sad. I like both of them. I'm great friends with David Duke. I work with him on a weekly basis. Me and him have an absolutely wonderful relationship. And, you know, I've got to the point with David where we are very close friends. And I think that comes out in our streams and our work together, because we often do have a bit of a joke with each other. But, yeah, I think it's sad they had that bit of schism. But I did speak to David about this the other day, and he does want to reconcile with Jared. He would like to do that. He doesn't want to. They're both old men now, or elderly men anyway. They're both in their 70s. And I don't think David wants bad blood between them. I'm sure Jared doesn't either. And I think saying that, Jason, you're going to have to put me in touch with Jared. I'll have to have a word with Jared and see if we can put them in touch, because I know that David would like that. And I know that two tireless warriors, and probably the two most prominent warriors for our people of their era, it would be very sad if they got to the end of their lives without standing in the same room again and shaking hands again. So maybe we could make that happen, guys. Maybe the next generation could help these old war horses meet one last time and shake hands. What do you think? Do you think we could make that happen?
I think we probably could, especially both are reasonable men, and it's been quite a long time. And so I could see them. And there have been other schisms where just in the last, really just this last year, because I think things have gotten so bad that at least they're willing, maybe not necessarily to work together. There's been these couple of cases, not necessarily to work together, but at least to pave over some of the old bodies and not hold grudges. And as I say, both are very reasonable. I think that.
Well, I hope so. I mean, it would be really unfortunate if both of them were basically to never speak again. And I think that they are both very reasonable people. I don't think that they would want to go through life never speaking again. And I think if they did, it would be a very, very sad thing, because both of them have brought so much to this cause. They brought so much enlightenment. They brought so many red pills to so many people. And ultimately, both of them are united in their will to do good things for people of European descent. So, yeah, I don't want to talk about drama. Let's talk about bringing people together. And I think if we can bring those two people together, that would be fantastic. Kel Bell gave $3, thank you very much, and said, 1619 Project, blacks melting down Viking history, decolonizing British history, playing Hamilton and Boleyn. How do Europeans navigate the reality that blacks were hired to destroy white history? I don't know. How do you respond?
I'll jump right in. Sorry, yeah, I'll just very, very quickly, and I'll let Sam go. And just to say, the focus is in the wrong place with that question. These are anti-whites. Anti-whites come in all races. and they're going to inflict injury on us and our civilization. That the 1619 Project in the United States, you saw that Donald Trump banned the training at government centers and institutions and branches and the like, military, etc. And then the anti-whites, they just changed the name of the anti-whitism. That's why we have to focus on our people. We have to focus on the opposition being anti-white, and then serve white well-being, and you won't get it wrong. You do that, you focus on blacks, and then people are going to say, ah, I see you are one of the villains in the anti-white narrative, and I've learned over the course of my life that you like to cut babies' heads off, that you want to exterminate whole populations. Whether you think that or not, which you shouldn't be thinking such things, but whether you think that or not, you're going to be, that's going to be what they believe you think. And that will obviously undermine your ability to help our people go free.
Yeah, you nailed it. Sam, please. Especially you say it's like, reject anti-white lies, media. Hamilton. I mean, if you went to see Hamilton, you're anti-white. There's no one who didn't know what Hamilton was about and thought it might be good. It's like, it was plainly obvious. It's like, we're just going to rewrite white history here. And then with...
What was Hamilton? Please fill me in on what Hamilton was. I actually don't know what it was. I live in my own little bubble of playing retro games and talking to you guys.
Jason might be better, but from what I gather, they made a musical of Andrew Hamilton's life, and basically everyone in it was black, whereas obviously, you know, the kind of founding of America in those early years, there were no kind of black people of any import, really. Obviously he's talking about the Anne Boleyn. I mean, almost every BBC production, we were talking about this on the last Sunday when we were out walking, almost every BBC production kind of picks one figure from history and it's like, all right, they're gonna be black, whether it's like Merlin, Anne Boleyn, King Arthur, they'll just shove them in there and just be like, yeah, they were black. And it's like, well, I mean, what's your basis for this? And it's like, yeah, we found like an African skeleton somewhere in the UK. And it's like, you found one? And they're like, yep. It's like, right, okay. And they'll just use that as the basis to just paint our history as a tapestry of anti-white lies.
Yeah, well, I find all of that despicable. I find it very tiresome. I find the level of it enraging. But I do think it's a good thing because it wakes people up. And one thing that I've found from normies and the few normies that I still speak to, but especially to the normies that speak to my partner or my family, those are the kind of things that really wind them up. So yeah, keep it coming, keep it coming. You're waking people up. Evola's Monocle gave €30. Thank you for the very generous donation and said, happy Christmas and keep up the great work, guys. 14, thank you very much. RCP gave £5, thank you very much. He says, does Mark wear anything apart from black dress shirts?
I've seen his wardrobe. It is literally entirely black. It's
well, I've got to be honest. I am actually only wearing a black shirt. I'm essentially completely naked, other than the black shirt. That's
he
just how I roll.
Into a nappy for his underwear.
Oh, God.
And then puts his legs through the sleeves of a black shirt, and that's his trousers. It's really bizarre to meet Mark from the waist down.
Oh, this is going to be clipped out, isn't it? If anything is ever clipped out from this show, it's going to be this one ludicrous section. You've got to hand it to us, though. At least we can have a laugh at ourselves. I do love my black shirt. I do wear it to conferences, but people are going to get a mighty shock one day when I finally wear something different. It will happen. It will happen, but not just yet. Stanley Sluggett gave £10. Thank you very much. He said, if PA were in power, would the foreign aid donation the government generally gives each year become obsolete? If PA were in power, we would abolish foreign aid. If PA were in power, the money that we gave on foreign aid would be used for the good of our people, to either fund the voluntary repatriation service or to help needy Brits like veterans living on our streets. Do you have anything to add to that, Sam?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I've seen people on Twitter giving Rishi Sunak, our Chancellor, thumbs up because he said basically we're going to cut our foreign aid this year. And basically it's because we can't afford it. Our borrowing this year is £200 billion. higher than it was last year. We've basically, through this COVID bollocks, we've just completely bankrupted ourselves, borrowed a huge amount, which basically now means we're completely in the pocket of the money power, as if we weren't already. And now Rishi Sunak's going to come out, kind of dog whistle to the right wing and say, oh, you know, we've cut foreign aid, and people like Thor Britain are going to run around as if they've made a major victory or something like that. And it's, no, this is, they've basically cut foreign aid because they have to, in order to attempt to balance the books, although we're massively in the negative, and we're going to carry on being in the negative and more indebted to anti-white.
Indeed. Now, one question for me, this is a bit of a personal one, but I'm going to answer it anyway. Six Gun 1865 gave £5 and said, hi, Mark, any plans to marry your partner? I know you mention her a lot. Thanks to Jason for introducing me to the White People Press. I've bought some of their books and they're amazing. Well, thank you so much for the £5, Six Gun 1865. I appreciate the donation. And I, of course, have no plans to leave my partner. I would like to marry her one day. However, there are some interesting reasons why it's potentially good for me to not do that. Some legal reasons due to the position I'm in. When we got together, when she fell pregnant, when we were moving in together, we had an awful lot of costs to set up our home, and then little Sophia came along, and that was not cheap either. And we have spent our money wisely rather than having sort of a big wedding. And I have discussed this with her. And being a woman, one of her answers is, well, of course, I'd like to marry you, but I'm certainly not marrying you at the moment when I'm not in my best shape. That's one of her considerations. But there are other legal considerations. It's not something that I'm dodging or something. I don't want to, you know, I don't want the responsibility. I've got as much responsibility as I could possibly have. You know, she essentially, by all means, is my wife. But there are legal considerations as well that I have looked into if she was my wife. Now, people could either choose to believe me on that and take my word on it, or say, oh, well, you know, that's, you know, it's me somehow dodging my responsibilities. But if you speak to me in person, Sam and Laura will know exactly why I haven't. Well, one of the reasons I haven't married her, or one of the legal reasons I haven't married her, it is very important. And it's not just, it's not for my safety, but in a very real sense, it's for her safety. And that's something I do take very seriously. And if she was tied in with me as a legal entity, that could potentially place us both in a particularly bad situation, especially with what's been going on recently. That's as deep into it as I'm going to go. But thank you for the super chat. It's much appreciated. If you want to send a donation tonight, haven't, there's still a good 20 minutes to do so, and everything is very, very gratefully received. Just remember, these donations, they're not money that just goes in somebody's back pocket. They're not some slush fund. This is what allows me to work full time for this movement. We have a huge number of people watching tonight. We've got over 800 watching on Radio Albion. At the peak, this show had about 1,900 watching here on DLive. That means we've got 2,700 viewers tonight. Again, absolutely fantastic numbers. And, you know, those people who can donate just something small, it does make a huge difference. So thank you so much. We do have some non-paid super chats. People are welcome to leave those and vote on them. VM said, and this is for Sam and for Laura, who's hovering in the background, any news on when the next shipment of tea will be available?
I think we are looking at, is it a week on Thursday that it's arriving with us? But then we are also packaging and label it. So there's going to be, I think, well, we get it a week on Thursday. I think we'll probably be going on sale Friday evening. And I think this time we're planning on giving people a hard time that we're going to go on sale, because I think we went on sale about 10 o'clock in the morning last time, and a lot of people were at work, didn't see the message. And by the time I'd finished work at 5 o'clock, they'd gone. So I know a lot of people missed out. No, we didn't think it'd sell out. Laura was expecting, I think, 70 bags were sold in the first day. Yeah, you had a dream that you sold 77 bags, not 88 for some reason. And yeah, we ended up selling 1,000. So, I mean, thanks to everyone who got in there. it was amazing, the response. I couldn't believe it. But yeah, we'll be back in stock back end of next week. And from there, we should have a regular stock in. We just weren't expecting such a rush right at the start.
No, it was a fantastic buzz seeing them sell out. And it's great to know they'll be back in stock before Christmas. I actually know some very, very good friends of mine who are actually buying Grandma Towler's tea as a Christmas present, not just for one family member, but for all their family members. Every one of their family is getting Grandma Towler's tea for Christmas. The guy who I'm talking about, he knows who I'm talking about. He's a great friend of mine. I saw him the other night. He's a very, very generous guy. And he moved up here to be around our community. He's got a lovely partner. They've got a lovely house. And he always does his best to support this movement in numerous ways. So that's the kind of person that we need. And I've got to say this, that's the kind of attitude that we need. That guy is buying all of his family Grandma Towler's tea as a present for Christmas. He supports the cause in every way he can. Thank you, my friend. You know who you are. And I look forward to coming around again soon and giving you a thrashing at Street Fighter, as I always do. So a bit of a backhanded compliment there for you.
Just made me aware as well, sorry, that people are asking about the Red Squirrel mugs. They are a limited edition. I think we had 50 initially. We weren't even expecting to sell many of them. So we've ordered another 100, and that will be it for the Red Squirrel mugs. So if you get one of the 150, you will be an exclusive club of Red Squirrel enthusiasts. So going forward.
That is very good. Get your hands on those mugs. They will be something that is worth a lot in the future. We've got some more paid super chats. Oh, here's a good one. Christopher Vors. This is one of the most highly rated comments. He says, how do I get in touch with Sam, my Yorkshire organizer? Email him at yorkshire@patrioticalternative.org.uk. Richard Wagner gave $3 and said, since you said you are close with David Duke, can you please tell him to check the orders on his website? Ordered a copy of My Awakening a while back. Payment still hasn't been processed. Well, thank you for the $3, Richard. I will bring that up with him on Friday. He usually acts very quickly on things like that. Might be a glitch in the system. I will do my best. Or he might have been deplatformed with his payment processor. But I will ask him. Richard, thank you for the donation. And I will get straight on this when I speak to him on Friday. JW gave £10. Thank you very much, my friends. He said, evening all. How are everyone's Christmas plans coming along? Keep up the good work, chaps. Looking forward to 2021 when we can get properly stuck in again on networking without restrictions. Well, this year is going to be a really magical year for me. Sure, it'll be a magical year for Sam and Laura as well. It's their first year as a married couple living together. But for me, it's the first year when, not my daughter's first Christmas, but the first Christmas for her where she'll understand what Christmas is. And she's already been running around the local garden center picking decorations for the tree. And she loves unwrapping presents. But I think the trees, or our Christmas trees, likelihood of survival depends on whether she is in princess mode or terror mode. And if she is in terror mode, I'm not sure the tree is going to last the full Christmas period. Are you guys looking forward to Christmas?
I'm not entirely sure what we'll be doing for Christmas this year. Both my parents are taking COVID really seriously. So I forced a hug upon my mum and dad on our wedding day just because there was no way I was going to go away from that day without having hugged my parents. So for Christmas, I'm not entirely sure. I know last year I spent it with Laura's family and that was really nice. They've been really welcoming, actually. They've taken me in as one of their own. Might do that again this year. Especially if my parents are still doing the whole, you know, 2 meters away from each other, you know, can't be in the same room indoors or whatever. But I imagine if Boris comes out and says you're allowed, then they'll just, well, oh, yes, I guess you're allowed now. Like, COVID doesn't mind. It's like, Simpleton. Jason, you go. What are you doing?
I'm just very excited. I'm always excited for Christmas. It's a joyous time, and we also have to think about those who are maybe not in the best way at Christmas. Same in Thanksgiving here in the United States, but really looking forward to it. And Mark, Promethea Althea has brilliantly christened your daughter as Princess Terror. So she covered the bases. Princess Terror.
She certainly is. I have so many Sophia stories, and I'm not going to bore you with them all, but literally on a daily basis, she does something which is truly adorable, but it's also something which tests mummy and daddy's patience to the greatest degree. Beer Hall Pooch asked the following. He says, Sam, soap and lampshades are as popular as tea. Please consider branching out. It will be a roller coaster profit of 6 million.
Oh, my God. I know, what is it? There's a company, Mighty White Soap Company, over in America, who's done really well with their own brand of soaps. And over in the UK, we've got brands like Lush, who are openly anti-white. You look at when you go into Lush, I don't know if anyone's ever been in, but the products themselves look like crap. Like they're just kind of cobbled together, and they've got the mold lines on. It's like, this is something you can quite easily do yourself with a little bit of know-how. It wouldn't be hard. I know Laura, she used to love Lush. And then I think with BLM, it finally pushed her over the edge. I think that they had it in almost every single one of their shop windows. She was like, I'm done with them. I'm never buying from Lush again. So there's been a severe lack of bath bombs in this house, but somehow we've made it through.
That's yes, it is. It is. These companies are sickening. I'm very distant now to sort of any sort of company loyalty whatsoever. The only companies I still sort of have any time for is obviously my Red Bull addiction has to be fed on an hourly basis. So I do buy Red Bull, but they're quite anti the woke agenda. And obviously I do still love Nintendo, but sadly they've fallen from grace.
Maybe
what?
A certain tea brand, maybe,
Mark? Well,
that you might be loyal to.
I think that I am going to be sticking it to the man by switching my brand to Grandma Towlers. Although I did tell Laura that in the first batch, I was not going to be purchasing because I actually had faith you were going to sell out. And I didn't want to be somebody who took one of the first pouches and denied somebody else their tea. I am happy to wait in line so that other people can get their batch before me.
Kelsey, a couple of tea bags as a thank you.
Well, I would love, as I say, it was one of those things. I did want one of the first batch, but I didn't want to deprive other people. And I knew there was such excitement in this community. And I just didn't want to be, I didn't want to hear from one of our lovely supporters that they'd got home from work and they were sold out. And I'd bought a couple of pouches, and that meant somebody else couldn't have one. I thought that would be a little bit irresponsible of me. You know, it's not like
the first PWR after they've sold out, you've just got mountains of tea.
Like it's like PS5 week. I've got a wall of PlayStation. I've scalped all the PlayStation 5s and all the towels. I'm selling Towlers tea at 100% markup on eBay. I mean, somewhat unacceptable, I think. And also, as I said, with you being the nationalist doomslayer, I don't think I would. I ever want to step on you guys' toes. I think staying on the right side of Sam and Laura is high on my agenda. Martin Smith gave $10 and said, "Remarriage." Thank you very much, my friend. He said, remarriage, you're an honorable man, Mark. Trust your instincts. Maybe don't read this. If you look into the history of marriage, it's not simple. Historically, it's not a fixed thing. It was outside the church, then later brought into the church, then later into the state. Just do the right thing. Well, thank you very much. And look, I can't emphasize enough, I am doing the right thing. I work from usually 6 a.m. till, by the time I finish work tonight, by the time I've downloaded this video and put it onto BitChute, I will have been at my desk since before 7 a.m. till around 11 p.m. tonight. I had a short break where I grabbed a cheese and pickle sandwich, and I went out for a 35-minute walk, well, maybe 40-minute walk, actually, to the duck pond to feed the ducks and to grab an extra can of Red Bull from the shop. That's my day. And I work very hard both for this community and also so I can provide for my family and my daughter. My sense of dedication to everyone here, to my friends, to this community, to the people who have been so generous toward me, but also, of course, to my loved ones, it is unquestionable. And if people are thinking that I'm not getting married because one day I'm going to cut and run, that's well off the mark. The only way I will ever be separated from my lady and my daughter is if either for some awful reason she decided to leave me, or if I was killed and they wheel me out in a box so I can't be with them, or obviously taken to prison. There's no way that by my own volition would I ever, ever leave my family. That's not the question here at all. I want to really, really stress that. It's not something I would ever consider or ever engage in. I take my duty to my people, my loved ones, my friends, my family, with the absolute seriousness that it deserves. And, you know, you've got my word on that. And I'm happy to sign my name in blood when it comes to that one. Trust me. Kelt said, Mark, you are a beefcake alpha male. Will you therefore, Vladimir Putin style, take off your top to inspire nationalism? Not today. And I'll tell you why. Because I despise this lockdown. I had been, when this stupid lockdown ended the first time around, my body, which was in great shape, had turned to not so great shape. I hadn't become a slob or anything. But then I was just getting back into super shape. And my friend Jez will attest to this. I was just pushing out some personal bests at the gym again when I'm back in lockdown. And I can assure you, if you want to see my body, go on Instagram. There are pictures of me there. I was in great shape. I will be in great shape again. And I can assure you, I do take physical fitness very, very seriously. And one great thing about having a child is if you take them for walks and you want to get fit, put your child in a sling and carry them for sort of a 6 to 10K walk. I can tell you, you build up some fitness and some endurance doing that, because my daughter is a little bit of a lump. I think she weighs about 11, 12 kg now. So putting her in the sling and going for a walk, it's not the heaviest thing in the world, but it is like doing a weighted march, which is quite good. It's quite good. Sam, do you have anything to add to that?
There's a guy who comes to our events, and he's ex-military, but he's got a lovely boy. He's about 6 years old now, something like that. But on a recent walk, I think you must have had him on his shoulders for a good hour and a half. And I've had kids on my shoulders before, like cousins and nieces, nephews, and so on. And it's like after 10 minutes, it feels like your neck's going to fall off, and it really kills you. So for him to go with a six-year-old for like an hour and a half, I was just like, hats off. I mean, it's the same guy who arrived like an hour and a half late for a hike we were going on, and then ran the 10K to catch up with us, and then, and then was just like fresh as a daisy. He's an absolute physical specimen.
Well, sadly, I've got to say, now I've hit 40, and this is important for everyone. When you hit 40, you do start to notice as you get older, it's easier to pick up knocks, it's easier to pick up tears, little things that you'd have run off a few years ago. They're niggles that, you know, do irritate you. But one thing that I've noticed that doesn't deteriorate as quickly as your speed is your ability to lift. And being at the gym, my strength hasn't really waned at all, not through age anyway. It's waned through not being able to go to the gym due to this scandalous, tyrannical lockdown. But age doesn't seem to get you there. It's really weird. It gets you with your speed. My runs have slowed down, and my ability to heal if I get a pulled muscle has waned over time, but your strength doesn't. And as soon as this lockdown's over, I'm going to be back with my good friend Jez. We're going to be back at the gym. We're going to be doing big lifts. And going into next year and beyond, hopefully I will be in great form. And I do that not just for myself, not just because I want to set a good example, but also for my daughter. I want my daughter to look at me and be proud of me. I don't want to be some fat, disgusting slob dad that my kid looks at and thinks, oh God, I don't want him to pick me up, you know, from my friend's house. I don't want him to pick me up from the birthday party because he's such an embarrassment. His guts hanging over his, his belt. It's disgusting. You want your kids to be proud of you. So be something that you're proud of, because if you're proud of yourself, it's likely your kids will be too. Be an inspiration to those younger than you. We've got one last super chat. $3 from Old Mother Earth. Thank you very much. He said, have you seen the Facebook site Unpatriotic Alternative? I find it whilst looking up grandma's tea. I haven't seen that. It sounds ridiculous, but I will probably check it out after the show. And now, this is the news you have all been waiting for. We are coming up to the end of the show, but before we end the show, I think what we need to do, I'm just going to look this up, is have a look at the Asda Christmas special. We said we were going to have a run on the Asda Christmas special tonight, and have we had a run? They're now in the negatives. 573 upvotes to 712 downvotes. Let these anti-whites know what you think. There is still time to register your protest. There's still nearly 1,600 people watching here on DLive. Let's get 1,600 dislikes on that wretched video. It is absolutely vile. If people are wondering why my dislike there isn't showing, that's because I am using the Edge browser there. I usually use Chrome. I've signed in and left my dislike on Chrome, but I use Edge to stream the pictures via screen share. So there you go. Great work today, guys. Great show. Now, before we wrap up, I just want to throw this out. We are going to be doing a special stream on Friday, myself and Laura. It's a monthly stream where we talk solely about what PA has done this month and what we're doing moving forward. So make sure you tune in then. But tonight's show has been brilliant, and not least because of the appearance of Sam. Sam, thank you so much. It's been great having you on the show. You've gone from the silent protagonist to a man of many words. It's been wonderful. Please, my friend, give yourself a suitable outro and tell us where we can find you and support your work.
If you want to contact us to attend events, it's yorkshirepatrioticalternative.org.uk. Make sure you get the org.uk. That seems to be where some people stumble. But we've got regions all over the country, and they're all led by really great guys, and you'll have a whale of a time there. In terms of the other two people on this call, I've got Jason's book, if you can see it there, Go Free. And if you combine that with Mark Collett's book, you will have everything you need to kind of really get started. Mark deals with what you can avoid in your life within society. And then Jason kind of gives you a good, almost like a ideological framework to work off and just get your headspace right going forward. I think he gifted it to us to give to Laura's sister, who kind of blasted away through it, but then it seems to have just gone one ear one at the other. But I took the opportunity to read it after she was done, and it's a fantastic book, so I'd highly recommend it, and I'll pass it on to Jason.
Well, thank you, Jason, my friend. Say your good nights and tell us where we can find your excellent work and how we can watch the after party, and also who is on the after party.
Well, the after party this coming weekend, thank you so much. Let me thank Sam as well for being here and for that magnificent endorsement, brother. Hope to see you back many times with us, and really love you. Thank you for everything that you're doing in service to white well-being. I'm going to be live briefly right now. I'm going to be talking about the U.S. election over on the No White Guilt channel and all of the other platforms that I'm on. And should be up on DLive as well. It's having some issues at the moment. But talking about the election right now, because there have been some there's been some major news. In fact, it's happening right now. The news is happening right now. The Pennsylvania state legislature is meeting, and they are talking about electors and choosing electors that will vote their conscience. So this is earth-moving sort of news. We'll be talking about that. Also about Dominion software briefly. We'll talk about that. Not going to be on long because at 6 o'clock. We are going to go over to the premiere. This is 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time today, the premiere of the great Jared George's musical debut. And I can tell you all that he is actually very good. So this is not just another like amateurish approach that we have occasionally seen in the White Positive sphere. He is very good. And we are very excited about our dear brother and his success. And we're looking forward to many more songs coming from him. So a big thank you to everybody who has wished me a happy Thanksgiving, and a big happy Thanksgiving to everyone else across the West. I feel most grateful to be able to stand shoulder to shoulder with heroes like yourselves.
Thank you. And before we go, we've got to plug one last thing. We've got to plug the White Art Collective's Meaning of a White Christmas. They are doing a karaoke live show that is coming up. And I'm a great supporter of these guys. So I'm just going to show you their trailer for Meaning of a White Christmas. Here you go, guys.
It's the time of year for goodwill toward men.
Yes, it's that time of year again. It's time for volume 3 of the White Art Collective's Meaning of a White Christmas. And we are seeking digital art submissions of all types. Music, poetry, stories, art, short films, animations, paintings, you name it. We need your submissions by December 17th for a special Christmas Saturday night live stream happening on Saturday, December 19th. So go to whitearcollective.com for more details. Merry almost Christmas!
You muted, Mark.
Sorry, I was going to say, do make sure you go and support White Art Collective. And I do have one last thing to ask Sam tonight before we go. Sam, my friend, we've been talking about this for a long time, but I am putting together a special team of crack commandos to take on a mission in Verdansk. Will you join my celebrity nationalist Call of Duty squad for a night of live Warzone action? You, me, Barclay, and Chris, are you in, my friend?
Well, when someone like Mark Collett asked me to be his number one guy, because you're such a shredded beast right now, I've got to. My computer is a bit of a potato. It used to be all right, but Call of Duty really runs it to its limits. But if you're having a special squad and there's and you can't get anyone else, I will fill that role. But
I thought you had a PS4.
Oh yeah, I've got a PS4. I suppose I can play. I can re-download it and I'll play with you on there.
Yeah, whatever's best, mate. So you're on the squad, and on that bombshell, it is finally coming. I am going to be testing OBS soon to make sure the streaming works, and we are finally going to do a celebrity nationalist Warzone match and try to get that win. On that bombshell, we will be back same time next week with the Iconoclast. It's going to be big, and I am back with Laura on Friday night, 7 p.m., discussing PA progress. Thank you so much. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to Sam. Thank you to all the people who donated so very, very generously. And finally, the biggest thank you of all goes to our incredible audience. I love you all. It's been a fantastic night. Stay safe in these troubling times, and I'll see you again soon. Same time next week, guys. See you later.